All right, so have you ever borrowed something and maybe the return plan wasn't totally thought through? I
Yeah.
mean, we've all been there, right? But what happens when that borrowed item is like a car and the return plan involves leaving it on the side of a highway, hundreds of miles from the owner? That's where we're diving deep today with a case that went all the way to the Oregon Supreme Court,
Okay.
State v. Langus. This isn't just about one stolen car. It
Right.
really digs into like the very meaning of intent when we're talking about theft.
Yeah, it's fascinating how this case makes us look at those gray areas of the law, you know? We
Yeah.
often think of theft as so black and white, like you either meant to steal something or you didn't.
Right.
But State v. Langus throws a wrench into that.
So can you set the scene for us? What actually happened in this case?
Okay, so we have two individuals, Langus and his friend Carrier, on a little road trip from Vancouver to San Francisco. And they decided to borrow a car in Eugene, Oregon,
Okay.
without the owner's permission, of course.
So not exactly your standard rental agreement.
Not quite. And as you might expect, their journey was cut short when they were caught by the Oregon State Police on Highway 5
Uh-oh.
between Eugene and Roseburg.
And this is where that whole borrowing defense starts to fall apart.
Exactly. See, in Oregon, to prove larceny, you need to show intent to permanently deprive the owner of their property. That's straight from Oregon Revised Statute 164.310.
Okay. So the law is pretty clear on that.
Yeah.
But Carrier actually testified that they were planning to leave the car in Roseburg in perfect condition. So was this really theft if they were just going to abandon it and
Right.
they were going to leave it in perfect condition so the owner could get it back?
That's where things get a bit murky. You see, it's not just about what the person taking the property intended to do, but also the circumstances around that intention.
Okay.
Did they abandon the property in a way that made it practically impossible for the owner to get it back, or at least very unlikely? That's what the court really focused on.
So it's not just a hope that the owner will magically find their car again. It's about if, like, a reasonable person would think the car was gone for good,
Yeah.
just based on how and where it was left.
That's it. And in this case, the jury instructions actually said that intent to permanently deprive could be inferred if abandonment made recovery difficult or unlikely. And this seemingly small wording is what Langus ended up appealing.
Hold on. Why would the difference between difficult and unlikely be such a big deal in a case like this?
Well, because legally speaking, those two words carry very different weight. You know, difficult implies there's still a reasonable chance of
All
recovery,
right.
even if it takes some effort. But unlikely suggests the odds are really stacked against the owner ever seeing their property again.
So Langus is arguing that just because it might be difficult for the owner to get their car back doesn't automatically mean he intended to keep it forever.
Yeah.
I can see how that could be a strong argument.
And you'd be right. This is where we start getting into some pretty interesting legal territory. You know, to really get the impact of State v. Langus, we have to look at how Oregon courts have traditionally interpreted permanent deprivation,
Right.
especially in cases that involve abandoned property.
So there's this whole history of legal decisions that come into play,
Exactly.
which just makes this case even more interesting. It's not just about this one car, it's about setting a precedent that could affect future cases
Absolutely.
involving stolen property. And to make things even more complicated, we have Justice Teneke's opinion in this case,
Right.
which really lays out the court's reasoning.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm ready for the deep dive. What did Justice Teneke have to say that made this case so important?
Well, Justice Dinick really got to the heart of it when he said, you know, an intent to take the property of another person without permission, use it for a bit, and then abandon it, that might actually be an intent to steal. He goes on to explain that that kind of intent isn't considered stealing if they abandon it in a way that it'll probably be returned to the owner, but it is stealing if the abandonment creates a big risk of the owner losing it permanently.
Okay, so it doesn't really matter if Langus and Carrier hoped the owner would find the car. It's the actual risk they created by abandoning it that matters.
Exactly. Their hope doesn't erase the risk, and that's where we start to see how broad the implications of State v. Langus really are. You know, it shifts the focus from just what the thief intended to the potential consequences of their actions.
But doesn't that kind of create a slippery slope? I mean, if we're judging intent based on the consequences, then where do we draw the line? What about finding a lost wallet and not turning it in?
Right.
Would that be theft too?
That's a great question, and it's one that legal scholars have been debating ever since this case came out. It makes us rethink what theft even means. If someone finds a wallet and tries to give it back, but it still gets lost, are they a thief just because the owner never got it back?
That seems a bit extreme.
It does.
I can see how this case could make people anxious about even borrowing a book from a friend and forgetting to return it.
It definitely shows how important it is to have clarity in the law. The court in State v. Langus said that a considerable risk of permanent loss is enough to prove intent, even if it wasn't a guaranteed loss. It's not about certainty, it's about the level of risk.
So even if Langus and Carrier thought the owner might find the car eventually, the fact that they left it in a way that made recovery unlikely was enough to prove intent.
Right.
But what about the difference between difficult and unlikely in the instructions to the jury?
Yeah.
Did the court care about that?
Justice Dinneck did acknowledge that unlikely is the more accurate word when we're talking about the risk of permanent loss. But he didn't think that using difficult in this particular case was enough to overturn the verdict. He didn't think it misled the jury or hurt Langus's defense.
So it was more of a technical error than a major problem with the case?
Exactly. The court basically said, yeah, unlikely is better, but difficult isn't a huge mistake that throws the whole case out.
I see how that might annoy some legal experts, but it makes sense practically. But how has State v. Langus actually changed things for lawyers handling these kinds of cases? I bet it's cited a lot.
It has. It's a case that both prosecutors and defense attorneys need to know about. For prosecutors, it shows how important it is to really focus on the context of the abandonment when they're building their case. You know, it's not enough to just show that the defendant left the stolen property somewhere. They need to prove that where and how it was abandoned created a big risk that the owner would never get it back.
So abandoning a car in a busy parking lot where someone is bound to find it wouldn't really work.
Probably not. The prosecution would need to show that the car was left in a condition or a place that made it very unlikely to be recovered.
Like leaving it in a remote place and taking off the license plates?
Exactly. They'd have to establish that there was a real risk of permanent loss, not just a temporary inconvenience.
What about from the defense side? How has State v. Langus changed their approach?
It's given them a great tool. That difference between difficult and unlikely. If they can show that the prosecution's using those words as if they mean the same thing, then they can question the jury instructions.
Mm-hmm.
They can argue that the state hasn't actually proven intent.
So they could point out examples where getting the property back might be a pain, but not impossible.
Exactly. They need to convince the jury that just because it might be hard for the owner to get their property back doesn't mean the defendant wanted to keep it forever.
Right. Like, say someone borrowed a bike and then left it at a friend's house overnight without asking.
Yeah.
It might be hard for the owner to get their bike back immediately, but they'll probably get it back eventually.
Exactly. They need to show that the prosecution is trying to make carelessness or temporary inconvenience a crime.
Okay. Now I'm starting to get it. Can we walk through some examples so our listeners can see how State v. Langus might apply in the real world?
Definitely. Hypothetical situations are a great way to test the boundaries of a legal idea.
So let's say someone takes a car and then freaks out and abandons it in a busy parking garage, leaving the keys in the ignition.
Mm-hmm.
Would that be a State v. Langus situation?
That's an interesting one. The defense would probably say that while it might be difficult to find the car in a huge garage, it's not unlikely that the owner would find it, especially with the keys still there.
So the prosecution would have to show that the garage was particularly dangerous or that the car was likely to be damaged or stolen?
Yeah. They would need to prove that there was a real risk of permanent loss, not just temporary inconvenience.
Okay. Let's switch it up. What if someone steals a car and then ditches it in a forest far away with flat tires and broken windows?
Now that's where State v. Langus would be a big deal. The location and condition of the car definitely create a big risk of the owner losing it for good.
I could see how that would be a much harder case for the defense. It's hard to convince a jury that the owner would ever find their car in that situation.
Exactly. The circumstances themselves really show the intent, even if the thief later says they hoped the owner would find it.
It sounds like State v. Langus really shows how much context matters in the law.
Absolutely. This case isn't just about legal theory, it's about how those theories work in real life.
And it shows that the law is constantly changing to try to keep up with how complex human behavior is.
Uh-huh.
This deep dive has been amazing. We've gone from a stolen car in Oregon to the very foundation of our legal system. State v. Langus is clearly more than just a case about stealing. It's a case that makes us ask some fundamental questions about justice responsibility and the balance between individual freedom and what's good for society.
It has been great talking about these complicated issues with you. And for our listeners, I encourage you to keep thinking about these questions.
Yeah.
Where do we decide what's a mistake and what's a crime? How do we hold people accountable for their actions without creating a system that feels too harsh or controlling? These are the kinds of conversations that shape our laws and really define the kind of society we want to be.
So this whole discussion about State v. Langius has really gotten me thinking. It's not just about stolen cars.
Yeah.
Right? It brings up some huge questions about how we define intent and responsibility, especially in the law.
Absolutely. You've really hit the nail on the head. This case goes way beyond car theft. It forces us to think about this tricky question of, can our actions be criminal even if we didn't actually mean to do anything wrong?
So it's not just about what's going on in our heads. It's about what happens because of what we do, even if we didn't plan for it to happen.
Exactly. And this idea that the consequences of what we do can sometimes be more important than what we intended when we decide if someone's guilty, that's been gaining traction in lots of areas of law, not just larceny. We're seeing it in white-collar crime, environmental law, even cases of negligence.
Wow. So State v. Langius is like this ripple effect, changing how we think about accountability in all kinds of legal situations. Can you give me an example of how this might work in another area of law?
Okay, let's think about environmental regulations. For example, it used to be that to prove a company intentionally polluted, you'd have to show they knew they were dumping toxins into a river or something. But now, partly because of the thinking we see in State v. Langius, that the focus might be more on the consequences of their actions, even if they didn't actually want to pollute.
So even if a company says, oh, we didn't mean to cause pollution, if what they did created a real risk of environmental damage, they could still be in trouble.
That's the idea. It's recognizing that recklessness or carelessness can have just as bad consequences as intentionally doing something wrong, and holding people and companies responsible for those consequences, regardless of their intent.
This is making me think about so many things. It makes you wonder where we decide the difference between just messing up and actually committing a crime. What about those times I've totally forgotten to return a library book?
Right.
Am I a criminal mastermind according to State v. Langius?
Well, I think it's safe to say forgetting to return a library book isn't quite as serious as stealing a car and leaving it in the woods.
Okay, good.
But you do have a point. State v. Langius does encourage us to think more carefully about what could happen because of what we do, even things we might think are small or not important.
It's like we're all on this legal tightrope trying to figure out intent, consequences, and accountability.
In a way, yes. It reminds us that the law reflects our values as a society. And as those values change, so does our understanding of what's a crime.
This deep dive has been so interesting. We've gone from a stolen car in Oregon to the core of our legal system. State v. Langius is so much more than just a larceny case. It really makes us face some basic questions about justice responsibility and the balance between being free and what's good for everyone.
It's been great exploring these complicated issues with you. And to our listeners, I hope you keep thinking about these questions.
Yeah.
Where do we draw that line between a mistake and a crime? How can we hold people responsible for what they do without making a system that feels too punishing or restrictive? These are the conversations that shape our laws and ultimately the kind of society we want to have.
That's a great point. And with that, we've come to the end of our deep dive into State v. Langius. We hope this exploration has given you a new way of looking at this important case and gotten you thinking about how criminal law is always changing.
Until next time, keep thinking about the law and remember everything we do, even with the best intentions, can have consequences we didn't expect.
And if you borrow that car, make sure you know how you're getting it back.